This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, including finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property, and getting it rental ready. The Blue Agency is happy to announce that they are in South Africa for private meetings. Contact Barry Cohen via WhatsApp on 076-577-2000. That's 076-577-2000. The Blue Agency, your Israeli property, is in good hands.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. I thought we'd start this last day of my week, at least, with an interesting story that comes from the University of Cincinnati. And that study has found that putting on tefillin has apparently got cardiovascular benefits.
What?
Research was done into people who regularly put tefillin on, which I presume is like every morning, except for Shabbat and Chagim. And apparently, this has shown that there are certain cardiovascular benefits in wearing tefillin. And I was trying to understand the medical explanation because, you know, this study shows that they got 30 people who regularly wear tefillin and they examined their heart rates and all kinds of medical tests were done before, during, and after they put their tefillin on. And apparently there are measurable differences, measurable changes, heart rate variability, things like that, which they can actually measure, which apparently they feel relaxes people and causes the metabolism to come down. And the conclusion is that what we found is that wearing tefillin caused changes to the heart rate associated with the lowering of the metabolism as measured via heart rate variability. So I don't know if a whole lot of non-Jews are now going to take to wearing tefillin in the morning in order to address their cardiovascular issues, but I found that to be a somewhat interesting thing, but perhaps more technical. We're moving into the world of chatbots, and this this ChatGPT is the latest artificial intelligence chatbot that has become so famous very, very quickly indeed. And now Israel has its own competitor to ChatGPT, which is a company called AI21, which has behind it, amongst other people, Amnon Shashua, who is very, very famous for being one of the founders of Mobileye. And apparently AI21's new chatbot, which is called Spices, has a writing tool that they're called WordTune. And this writing tool allows users to improve their English writing with computer-generated sentences based on the company's proprietary language model. But the fact is that WordTune has something which is even better than ChatGPT, which is apparently that they can that WordTune can actually bring sources. They can quote sources information has come from. And so, for example, you can ask WordTune to write additions to your text, to give historical examples, to display statistical facts, to raise counterarguments, to add inspirational quotes, to lighten up your text with a joke if you think that things are a little bit too heavy. So I was just wondering whether I wouldn't give you guys some sort of a broadcast, which is produced by ChatGPT or by WordTunes in this particular case, because apparently you can just go to these chatbots and ask them to produce text for you on a certain subject. I think in the case of WordTunes, you need to give some basic indication, so you need to start. They won't start for you. I think you need to start yourself, and then from there you can ask them to develop it for you. And I've actually seen people using WordTunes and the results of some of their writing. And I cannot believe sometimes that this email text that I'm receiving comes from the person that I know who has hardly any English capability whatsoever. And it's really pretty good quality. It's astonishing how good the quality of this is.
It's really quite frightening. We were talking about it a little bit earlier with Jan van Mullen, his editor of My Broadband. And I was saying the same thing. Somebody sent me a something that they had worked on using various technologies. And what I could do is put this week's column, let's say for the Jewish Report, support in it. And I could change the tone and improve things, and it just depending on what I wanted. I could make it sound tragic. I could make, and it was remarkable. It was really,
it is remarkable.
Just incredible to see.
I mean, on the one hand, it's a really great tool for people who need help to improve the way that they present themselves in their writing. Absolutely. But you sort of wonder how far this goes. It almost feels like our world is being taken over, that you don't really need talent anymore. Mm, you can just give it to the chatbot to do. And so we're kind of evening out.
And what happens at school and university? It's really quite frightening. Because, you know, are we educating people? Either way, let's talk about some of the other issues in Israel. An internal government disagreement has arisen over which minister has responsibility over the West Bank.
So, yeah, I mean, this is, I guess, unsurprising, because the way that the current coalition has been put together is that, as we discussed during the time that the government ministries were being handed out, that bits and pieces were taken from existing ministries and they were dished out in different ways, in a way that's not been commonly managed up until now. And so a disagreement broke out between two of the government ministers, Bezalel Smotrich and Yoav Gallant. Yoav Gallant being the defense minister. Smotrich is, of course, the minister of finance, but he also was given certain responsibilities over the West Bank. And of course, Gallant was not that enthusiastic about giving that up. And apparently there was a heated meeting between the two of them, which ultimately the Prime Minister was dragged into, as well as the Minister of Justice, in order to mediate the disagreement between these two. And ultimately what the Prime Minister decided was that the coalition agreement must be respected. So Smotrich's agreement was one of the first that was signed. And so by the time Gallant was issued the defense ministry, he was already issued it with a hole carved out of it. He'd already been, it already been diluted downward even before he got there. And so, in Gallant's words, Smotrich was playing in front of an open goal. Because at that time that the coalition agreement was negotiated, there was really nothing to stop him from demanding whatever he wanted. And apparently that's what happened. And now what's happened is that Smotrich feels that he has certain responsibilities in the West Bank. Gallant feels that, as the defense ministry was before, and COGAT, which is the authority that's responsible for civil administration issues in the West Bank, all fell under the Ministry of Defense. The Prime Minister decided the coalition agreement should be respected. The problem is that you need a chatbot to interpret the coalition agreement.
Absolutely.
Because apparently,
well, because they can't go to the Supreme Court, can they?
Yeah, I mean, apparently it's just so convoluted in the way that they've been put together that it's very, very difficult to understand exactly what's intended. But the Prime Minister has decided that authority over civil matters within the West Bank will be under Smotrich's ministry, and that all military matters and matters of illegal construction by Jews and by Arabs would remain with COGAT, and that would be with obviously issues with security and policy implications would all come under the defense ministry, but most importantly would be with the prime minister's oversight. So it feels almost like we need to have a responsible adult in this room at all times in order to manage exactly who is responsible for which part of the government. And of course, this is clearly a result of mixing and matching and slicing and dicing in order to suit the personalities that make up the coalition. But, you know, I guess some people would say it's surprising that it took this long for such a disagreement to arise. But it is inevitable, and further disagreements between ministers within the coalition are unfortunately inevitable because of the way that things have been constructed.
It's really just it the more we hear about this coalition, the more frightening it is, because it's almost, there's an element of desperation that everybody was just given what they were given, and that this coalition had to be formed at all costs. And it's really quite frightening. Itamar Ben-Gvir, speaking of which, he's vowed to keep on visiting the Temple Mount in spite of objections from Jordan. I mean, I just keep thinking of that famous saying, I think it's so famous, is just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Well, to be fair, I mean, following the Prime Minister's visit to Amman the day before yesterday, the news channels were very eager to get to Ben-Gvir to say, well, now that the Prime Minister has undertaken to the King of Jordan to maintain the status quo on the Temple Mount, what does this mean for you about your visits to the Temple Mount, which we all know you like to make from time to time? So I think that this wasn't really something that Ben-Gvir volunteered, but they gave him the opportunity to make a statement, and he very, very seldom gives up on that opportunity. And so what he said was that he had no plans to change his visits to the Temple Mount. And then, of course, he went on to say that Israel is a sovereign state and the Temple Mount is the most important place to the Jewish people. And as an independent state, we are therefore not under the auspices of any other country. And as a result of all of that, it should be clear that Jordan has really nothing to say about my ability or my right to visit the Temple Mount. And if I wish to do so, I will do so under full sovereignty of the state of Israel. So he did take the opportunity and really rubbed it in to the extent that he could in order to make his statement. Very undiplomatic, one might say, because there are ways of saying, I don't intend to change my visits to the Temple Mount, but we will try to coordinate it and we will try to do it in a cooperative way. But, you know, that didn't seem to be in his lexicon right now. He, I think, asked the chatbot to be quite firm,
aggressive,
and confrontational, perhaps, what might have been a word that he might have used to get his speech out. But yeah, I mean, obviously the King of Jordan didn't particularly say that Ben-Gvir shouldn't be allowed to visit the Temple Mount. I mean, it was quite carefully worded, and the agreement that the Prime Minister made was carefully worded, which is status quo. And to be fair, the status quo has been that Jews can visit the Temple Mount, but the government has been very, very cautious about managing that process. So long as, you know, we are not going to be confrontational about this, there are potentially ways of allowing people, all people, to do what they wish to do without having to necessarily raise the red flags and get the King of Jordan and the Prime Minister themselves involved in what becomes a diplomatic standoff on the Temple Mount. I think there are ways of managing it, and I think even Ben-Gvir, with his confrontational approach, could potentially visit the Temple Mount and exercise his rights as a Jew and an Israeli to visit the holiest site in Judaism without incurring the wrath of the Arab world. I think there is a way of dealing with that.
Well, it seems intentional to me, but we've still got a bit of a journey to travel along this political road. Before I let you go, tomorrow is in fact International Holocaust Memorial Day, isn't it?
It is, and I yesterday said it was today, which is incorrect. What I meant by today is that
tonight.
That's where it's being marked at the European Union. That's where the president, Israeli president, will be giving his address to the European Parliament. And he is in Brussels. We mentioned that he had an opportunity to meet with the King of Brussels yesterday, yesterday, and he also visited the Great Synagogue of Europe in Brussels, and he visited people within the Jewish community, so he's doing some good diplomatic work. Tomorrow is International Holocaust Remembrance Day. Why tomorrow? Well, that's the day which we understand commemorates the liberation of Auschwitz. And because it was done by the Allies, the international community feels that that's a good day for the international community, for the world at large, to celebrate International Holocaust Remembrance Day, whereas, of course, we in Israel celebrate it on Yom HaShoah, which is the week that follows at the end of, after Pesach, and that is a day which coincides with the uprising of the Warsaw Ghetto. So that's an action by the Jews rather than by the international community. And that's why we feel it's a day that we need to mark rather than a date that's imposed upon us. But of course, there is cooperation with tomorrow's day. And I feel that those who have the opportunity to mark International Holocaust Remembrance, they should certainly use it. Don't oppose it at all. I think it's a good thing. Interestingly, the Book of Names has been put up for display at the United Nations. This is a remarkable book. It contains 4.8 million names of the 6 million who died that Yad Vashem researchers have managed to identify and have managed to put together. And they've also left some blank pages which symbolize the victims' names that have not yet been recovered. But this has been put up at the United Nations. It's huge. It's something that stands 6 feet tall and like 26 feet long. So like 2 meters tall and 8 meters long, and the names are all arranged alphabetically and printed on very, very heavy sheets with basic information about the victims. The pictures that I've seen are quite remarkable. It's a very, very noticeable display in the entrance of the United Nations, and people go along there and actually open the pages and find names of relatives who died in the Shoah. I think this is an amazing thing. Those people have the opportunity to look this up and see how what it looks like at the United Nations. I would very much encourage you to do so and do something to mark Holocaust Remembrance Day tomorrow, even though it's not officially the day that we mark in Israel. And in fact, the events in Israel are very, very limited indeed. Yad Vashem will do some things and they will cooperate, but it's relatively limited. But I do encourage people to get involved.
Absolutely right. That's where we leave it. Anthony Rock, thank you as always. Wishing you a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we will catch you on Monday morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, including finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property, and getting it rental ready. The Blue Agency is happy to announce that they are in South Africa for private meetings. Contact Barry Cohen via WhatsApp on 076-577-2000. That's 076-577-2000. The Blue Agency, your Israeli property, is in good hands.